Chris Gibson, let's start. Last time we were talking, and you as a former colonel and battalion leader, and three times, I believe, you deployed, you have some pretty good ideas. It has not been unknown for a president of one party to bring somebody into the cabinet of another party. And so, if Hillary Clinton becomes president, if I were her, I would appoint you to be the Secretary of Defense. You know, you had the West Point experience. You've done all of this stuff. What's wrong with that thinking? You seem to be shaking your head.
Well, I mean, I think that my responsibility now is to do everything I can to help the Republican candidates for President of the United States to better understand national security. In our previous sessions, I talked about how underwhelmed I am with the campaigns on both sides, Republican candidates and the Democratic candidates for President of the United States. In that earlier show, I talked about how I want to see more positive vision and inspiration, but I also mentioned the importance of more detail and focus in national security. I'd like to further develop that here. You know, when I've watched these debates, I have seen an absence of focus and detail when it comes to these important issues. Anybody who tells you there are easy answers in the Middle East, they're just not being straight with you. And I think overall what we need to do is restore an approach that worked for us, I think, very well, peace through strength, deterrence. And, deterrence is a very nebulous concept. I'll acknowledge that. But I believe that, you can operationally define deterrence. Why does North Korea not attack South Korea, at least at the moment, thanks be to God? But it's because they think the costs outweigh the benefits. So that's an operational definition for deterrence. And deterrence, I maintain, is comprised of two basic factors, capability and will. If you have capability and you don't have will, you don't have deterrence. And if you have will but you don't have capability, you don't have deterrence. And we've seen an atrophying of deterrence that, in my view, has contributed to the instability that we're seeing across the world today. And I want to see us restore that deterrence. And that means revitalizing the armed forces. It also means being very careful in the words that you use and the policies. Video has to equal audio. If you draw a red line, you should be very careful about drawing red lines. And if you do, you got to be able to back it up, because if you don't, you're undermining will.
Can you think of a specific case where we have said we draw a line in the sand and then?
Well, that happened. Yeah. Obviously, that happened in Syria, and we're still paying for that. So again, I've always been one, you need discipline in your communications. If you're going to communicate something, you really have to be able to back it up. You should be very reluctant to draw red lines, because you always went in diplomacy, and it's about showing the potential adversaries and your friends the capabilities you have, because that's important to deterrence. That's why a robust exercise regime is important, that you should actually, and it's, you have observers. You want the world to see the military capability we have, because what we hope to do is to deter any need to use it.
Now, what about Ukraine? Do you think that we dropped the ball there?
Well, I do think in recent months we've been doing the best we can to reassure our friends and allies in Europe that any further incursion on the part of Putin is going to be unacceptable. That's why we have deployed paratroopers and other U.S. forces to Eastern Europe. And we've been clear in our communication. So I think we've helped to manage the situation in Eastern Europe. I do think that there was more we could have done a priori that could have perhaps deterred Putin from taking action in Ukraine in the first place. But we can't go back there now.
I'm fascinated. What would you have done?
Well, some of the actions that we have taken since that. We took elements of the 173rd Airborne, and we deployed them not only in Ukraine but in other parts of Eastern Europe, along with working with our friends and allies. Among the issues we've had, Alan, is this, our entity of NATO. We have not seen the full instantiation of their commitments. We've had a free rider problem. The nations in NATO have pledged that they would spend 2% of their gross domestic product, GDP, for national security. They haven't. In some cases, they have. But among the over two dozen nations that are part of NATO, there's only been a handful that have met that commitment. And that's unacceptable. I mean, that's a failure of leadership. Both Republican and Democratic presidents have not used the leverage of the United States to ensure that these nations do their part. Because when they don't do their part, it ends up falling on us, because we feel an impetus to take action because we know this importance of deterrence. So what I'm saying to you, Alan, is there was more that could have been done you know, dating back to even previous to the incursion in Crimea, that would have signaled to Putin that, you know, we're going to be standing with our friends and allies in Europe. Now, again, having crossed that bar, I do think that we've taken some action since that time to reassure our friends and allies and to check Putin. But that's no guarantee to the future. This is a wild card. This guy is a follower of the school of Realpolitik, and he's looking for weaknesses anywhere, and he's going to wedge and drive that wedge in any of these weaknesses. I think his actions in Syria have been very strategic. His end state, in my view, has always been to be at the head of the table when these peace negotiations occur. He wants to be dictating what these terms are, or at least playing a major role in these. And, you know, not only that warm water port that he's now exploiting in Syria, but even beyond that. And he wants to see Iran rise in power because he knows that hurts the United States. So all of this, Putin has been acting strategically. And, you know, this has been really a shortcoming for us, not just Obama, but certainly President Obama, but also President Bush previous. We have really not, I think, played some of the strengths we have. But as it relates to these campaigns, these presidential campaigns, I have written on this, I've spoken on this, and I'm available to our presidential candidates, as I mentioned, Republican presidential candidates, to help them in preparing for this. So we'll see what develops on that in the coming months.
Okay, we only have about 2 minutes. There's a stench of real corruption in Albany. Shelley Silver, the speaker, is on his way to jail, at least as we speak. And same thing for Dean Skelos, the Republican leader in the Senate. You have taken yourself out of running for Congress another time. You pledged yourself to a term limit, self-imposed, and you did it. Should we have term limits?
Absolutely. We need a whole program of reform. These cases, now over 24 of these major cases, not only disappointing but disgusting, quite candidly. And we can't accept it. 20 million New Yorkers, we cannot accept this. That's among the major issues. Is as I move all about upstate New York, I just, and even in New York City and parts of Long Island, there's this sort of resignation to, you know, what they see as the status quo in Albany. We can't accept this. This is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. We need a program of reform. We need to insist upon it. I'll be advocating for a constitutional convention. If we're not able to do it that way, we need to pressure our government to take action. We need term limits. I think we need leadership by example. We need a candidate for governor who will self-impose those term limits and then ask the legislature to send the legislation to put it in statute.
As you've done. You've self-imposed the term limit.
I have. And I've also co-sponsored legislation in the federal government to do it. Unfortunately, I'm one of only 9 people that co-sponsors.
I'm so surprised that that your colleagues don't want to have term limits. We only have a minute, Chris, and I wanted to ask you about my other favorite, which is initiative and referendum. Do you believe in that?
I do.
Me too.
But, you know, it goes this program of reform, we need term limits. We should start with the executive, and then from that position of moral strength of having put that in law, we should then turn to the legislature and say, look, our governor now, whoever that may be, has done this. The legislature needs to walk with the governor and have term limits as well. And then we need disclosure. We need to have more transparency in our legislature. We need more what's described as regular order,
sure,
which is not this 3 men in a room, which is wrong in so many ways. Look, we should close the LLC loophole, and we also need independent redistricting. We have this illusion that we pick our representatives when too often, based on the reapportionment process, we see representatives pick their voters at the end of a redistricting process. There should be an independent redistricting so that we can bring more virtue to that. And look, you mentioned initiative and referendum. One way to do that is through the Constitutional Convention. I know that there are those listening out there that are worried because of their equities that they may have already in statute. I have been very disciplined in saying what this Constitutional Convention should focus on. It should focus on these areas of restoring faith in our government in Albany. And that means term limits. That means addressing this LLC loophole. That means independent redistricting. This approach, I think, will restore more faith in government in Albany. And as a people, we need to insist on it, regardless of party. We should unite in that. Regardless of where you may come from ideologically, you should be for these reforms.
Well, I have to say thank you, Chris Gibson, for coming in and talking to us, as always. And I certainly agree with your program for reform in state government. However, if I'm sitting there and I'm one of these guys, I don't think there's been any real hope for it. Look, they take Bronx boss Hasty and they put him in Shelley Silver's place. Things haven't changed, and I hope...
We can overcome, Alan. I mean, look, we have 20 million people in this state. If we do this in the right way, with civility, certainly treating everybody with dignity and respect, but insistent on reform, that this government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall be renewed. If we do this, we will succeed.
Chris Gibson, always wonderful to see you. Thanks again for being here.
Thank you. Best wishes to all the listeners out there.